to apply.
Welcome back, everybody. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. But if you want to jot that phone number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in the queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on there live and let you air your question or comment to our guest today. Our guest today, just for grins, it's the Rick and Rob Show. No offense, Matt, certainly all respect that is generated that need to be Rob Pell and Rick Riker, city councilors here. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this morning coming to us here on KAJO Radio.
Good morning.
Thanks for the invitation, Chuck.
All right. It's standing every first Tuesday of the month. We like to have city councilors in here. What are your constituents talking to you about? First of all, Rob, what are your people talking to you about right now?
Well, still the homeless issue and the transition that's going on between the unmanaged camps down to Parkers. I think virtually everyone in the city has been waiting for this for quite some time, and it's in full swing. It's almost completed as far as the transition from the unmanaged camps to Parkers.
All right, a couple of questions about that. First of all, let's go over to Rick. Rick, what are your people talking about? Same thing?
No, I hear some people talking to me about the new water plant, when it's going to get up and going, and if the rates are going to keep changing.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's deal, first of all, with Parker's Place. First of all, Parker's Place up and going. I'm assuming at full capacity right now, and we've seen some of the transition going on there. I was surprised to see, first of all, that they closed the 7th Street camp first as opposed to the 6th Street camp, which is now, or last time I saw it, was right at capacity.
Yeah, it's actually, I just need to correct it, it's not at full capacity yet. I actually just spoke with Bernie both yesterday and today, and he's hoping by July 17th to be at full capacity. They're about 25 people short of full capacity right now.
So they've got about 125 people.
Roughly. And the I believe the reason that the 7th Street camp was closed first is because that actually was a smaller one, and Bernie wasn't ready for a large influx at that time. So to close half of the large camp would have been really kind of unwieldy. So they went with the number, I believe, that they could accommodate, and that happened to be the number that was at the 7th Street camp. 7th Street camp is actually partially open right now, and that is the camp that is holding the remaining 25, or giving us the capacity, I should say, not holding of everyone's there on their free will, but giving us the capacity to meet the judge's mandate.
Now, the idea is to keep one of the camps open, I thought, or one of the unmanaged locations. I thought that was going to be the 7th Street camp. Is that still the plan?
Well, actually, I spoke with the city attorney yesterday, and that actually is not the plan that staff is going with right now. Once Parkers has full capacity, the plan is to actually close all three camps. There are questions as to exactly what happens if 151st person comes in when Parkers is at capacity and they have nowhere to go. The city attorney's position is that we're complying with the judge's mandate, the 150, and if someone brings us up, takes us to task legally over and above that, we'll deal with that when it comes. But so the plan now is to actually close them down completely once Parkers is at full capacity.
All right, that brings up a couple of questions, and Rick, feel free to jump in on this, because once we close them all down and Parker's Place is at full capacity at 150 and the exclusion zone downtown, and we'll get to that in a moment or two, is in full swing right now, there are people that's not going to want to go into that managed facility. What happens to those people, and what should the populace be aware of right now?
Well, that's a great question. It's the question that all thinking people have in Grants Pass. And I asked the city attorney again yesterday, and the answer has been pretty consistent, is then at that point it's up to law enforcement to do their job, and we'll take it from there. Basically, we're going to enforce our municipal code, and that's the answer that we get from our attorney.
All right, Rick, you want to weigh in on this?
No, it's just a wait-and-see thing. I really appreciate Bernie's been able to put this camp together and have the accommodations for the people, and I think things have gone quite well. I realize it got sidetracked a little bit there with storm drainage and having to pave the gravel parking, but that's been accomplished now.
All right. Well, I from from a citizen's perspective, looked like that Parker's Place was going to be certainly a good thing, maybe not the end all, but certainly a great step towards alleviating this problem. We've got the exclusion zone downtown right now. That went into effect immediately. So kudos to the city council for getting that happen. Rob, you're a downtown businessman. Have you seen an effect on that already? Or
I can't say that I have. It's been really quick, and I would imagine that most of the we'll say the homeless that could be downtown would have no way of knowing that an exclusion zone is in effect. You know, but I just have to also make the point that our city attorney was quite clear in a document that she wrote. And she said that, you know, and this brings us, will probably bring us to another part of our discussion, but she said until, misdemeanors are addressed through the municipal court, which we don't have yet, there will be no impact on public nuisance type conduct or the ability to get and keep repeat offenders off the street. So, while
this jail can't hold them right now.
Right. Well, or they don't want to hold them. And, you know, and
I could have shown another one, but yeah, we'll get to that.
Or maybe SB 48 prevents them from holding them.
Correct.
So, but there's so many, there's in-depth discussions that need to happen. It's not, and that's what the council's supposed to do, is actually think things through. You know, there was a big push for an exclusion zone, but I question how well thought out that was. It's a piece that's now on the books. I don't think that our problem was ever that we didn't have enough laws on the books. We had plenty of laws on the books. The question is what to actually do with them and how to, you know, how to enforce them. That's been the question all along. So yes, we do have another law on the books that sounds good and people are happy about it. The city attorney and I question whether or not her statement actually, you know, that it'll have no impact on nuisance type conduct, or the ability to get and keep repeat offenders off the street until we have the second tier of municipal court, not just any municipal court, but the one that will actually prosecute, misdemeanors as well.
All right. That being said, whereabouts are we when we get to a municipal court? That would have to be the next question.
Well, the discussion, I think, is on the our workshop for August 17th. I think we just added that. And there's two levels of municipal court. There would be one that would just handle violations, and that would be less costly to implement, although we've been informed, we don't have the figures yet, that that's still likely going to cost the city money out of our general fund to be able to do that. But that would just cover violations, you know, nuisance things and scattering trash and loitering and things of that nature. Once someone has been, we'll say, trespassed the exclusion zone, public safety has figured that someone has either had two violations or a felony or some combination thereof, then they can exclude them from the downtown area. And if they're found back in the downtown area, they can be cited for trespass. My understanding is that would be a misdemeanor. And if we're going to enforce that, we need to have the second tier of municipal court that would enforce misdemeanors. And that comes with much higher cost. You know, we need to have jail beds. We need to be able to provide indigent people legal representation, lawyers, and so forth. So there's a lot to consider to actually tighten this up, and there's a lot of funding to consider to tighten this up. And we're going to supposedly get some funding questions answered on August 17th.
All right. Any idea? Ballpark? Just a guess here. Go ahead, Rick.
The other comment has been made on this. To put that all into effect is probably going to take a year to 2 years. So it's not something can happen overnight. We need it tomorrow. So it's a real issue. And I think that was going to be your question.
Yeah. You're well, that's what the people need to know right now, is what we're looking at. Parker's Place, a great step. The exclusion zone, another step towards cleaning the situation up. Once all the camps are closed, there will still be people out there looking for a place to pitch a tent, a place to sit down and rest. And that's the question, I guess, that we all have to answer right now.
Well, Chuck, I asked in writing the city manager last week. I said, if in this scenario, it's 6 o'clock on a Friday evening, a couple with a dog pitches a tent in one of our parks, and Parker's is at full capacity, what exactly is going to happen? What precisely are the police going to say to somebody in that situation? And frankly, I didn't get a specific answer. I just said that they'd go through the certain protocol. And I emailed again yesterday, specifically, what will they be told? Where could they go? And I was, told so far just that, well, they will be informed of what our laws are and so on and so forth. But that, that doesn't answer your question, doesn't answer my question. So I'm not sure about that yet. We're just going to have to see how that plays out. Yeah.
Do car campers still figure into this? And they're still around.
They absolutely should, and they do figure into it, but so far the city council doesn't have a solution for them.
All right. Rick, do you have a solution?
Well, I have a solution, but unfortunately state law doesn't allow it to happen. I wish we had an overflow site out in the county where if Parker's Place is full up, we could say we could refer those people to that location. But unfortunately, state law wants us to have it within the city limits.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Rick. I don't know that we would have to have it. Once we have our 150 spots at Parker's, I think we've complied with what state law is mandating for us. I think that the county could play a part. And the car campers, since they are mobile, it wouldn't be a problem for them to be out in the county. Now, they wouldn't be near services. They wouldn't be near, caseworkers and things like that. But it certainly would be a legal place potentially to park their car.
Are we in negotiations with the county?
I don't know that that discussion has been held at this point.
That's a great idea because we are now meeting. The mayor, myself, and the city manager are meeting once a month. We've decided that we're going to meet when we actually have an issue rather than sitting around and pontificating. But that would be a great issue to see what they could do on that front, what they could provide for us. And we really don't need that much. It's just a paved lot, maybe with a porta potty or something like that.
The other thing that's been said, too, is the county can furnish transportation to the site, and you may go out there once or twice during the day, but then that would give them transportation in town if they needed services.
Right, depending on how far out of town it is, and it's just across this city line.
But they are car campers, so theoretically they have a vehicle that can move. And that's a good idea, though, as far as bringing it up with the county commissioners. They could be really integral in this discussion.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much so far. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We have city councilors Rob Pell and Rick Riker in studio. Stay tuned. More to come here on KAJO.
Southern Oregon is known for its
the Glees Resort.
Welcome back, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. City councilors Rob Pell and Rick Riker in studio with us here, and we've been talking about, of course, the homeless situation, and that's been an ongoing topic for, golly, how many years at any rate? Certainly some significant improvements happening here in the city, which raises more questions. And before we put this one to bed, Rob, do we want to really go over what a municipal court would look like, make sure that people understand what we're looking at here, two levels that have been recommended, and on top of that, we need lawyers and judges, and what all is entailed?
So the reason we would even potentially need a municipal court is because we've all seen that, I guess, our DA and the county legal system are just not looking at what they would consider to be low-level crimes, and as a result, we have a catch-and-release system. We've seen, stories with someone's been in and out of jail 25 times in a year or two. So a municipal court, we would be taking matters into our own hands. And Ashland and Medford, they do municipal courts, and it's kind of for that reason, to be able to create, to be able to look at and focus on some of the lower-level crimes that the county and the state-appointed DA doesn't really don't want to deal with. So, but with that said, there's two levels of municipal court. One would be fairly easy to set up, from relatively easy, but still could take a year, as Rick was saying, and that would be one that would handle just violations, really low-level stuff. And then the other, like they have in Medford and Ashland, would also handle misdemeanors, which would be trespass and other slightly more serious crimes. And combined with that, we would probably have to rent some jail space from the county. We would have to have, 3 to 5 to 10 jail beds, because if our municipal court is going to sentence somebody to some time spent in jail, we've got to have a guaranteed spot for them. Otherwise, we have no teeth. Otherwise, our exclusion zone, and our low-level municipal court really has no teeth. So we've got to put some teeth behind it, and that's the second-level municipal court, but you've got to be able to pay for people's legal representation, people who need a lawyer but can't afford one, and other court costs. So how we would pay for that and what the cost would be, I don't know. Whether we'd ever have a potentially some kind of bond for the municipal court and float that to the people, let the people vote on it, I'm not sure. But we'd have to figure out a way to fund it, regardless of the level. And the second level is the one that would actually give us some teeth.
All right. That, talking about that second level, it also means jail spaces. And right now, jail spaces are at a premium because we've all seen the catch and release. We had a story yesterday about a gentleman caught in the municipal, I think it was the park restroom, in his underwear with a needle still stuck in his arm that tested positive for fentanyl. Yeah, he was taken to jail, cleaned up a little bit, and then released on his own recognizance. Mm-hmm. All right, that's the kind of situation we have. And that goes back to, I think, it's what we're talking about with House Bill 48 that the council certainly had a vote on last time to at least to alert the legislature, your feelings on it?
Yeah, it was, I believe it was to either modify or repeal. And to me, at the council level, and frankly, I haven't heard it from the sheriff or the police chief, we haven't really had any kind of actual in-depth discussion on that subject. I mean, one of the primary tenets of our jurisprudence system is innocent until proven guilty. So somebody could get arrested potentially, and maybe they're held in jail for a while because the courts are backed up, or it's a holiday weekend, or whatever. And if somebody is if it's a poor person, somebody doesn't have a lot of financial ability, they could be in jail for a while. Next thing you know, they're going to lose their job. Next thing you know, they're going to lose their house. Next thing you know, they're homeless. So there's things to discuss and things to think about. And I'm not saying that I am for or against SB 48. I am for actually looking at it and discussing ways to modify it, possibly repealing it. But I think, again, innocent until proven guilty is. You know, we can't get away from that in America. It's no longer America if we're going to get away from that. And sometimes poor people spend an exorbitant amount of time in jail, and that can have other effects down the line, as I just mentioned. So, but there's something that's causing our catch and release to the extreme that we do have, and it needs to be discussed in a very thoughtful way, rather than just, oh, you know, lock them up, throw away the key. You know, it's that. You know, that's not what city councilors are supposed to be doing. You know?
We had the sheriff in here actually last week talking about that very thing, and he's lost control of really who can stay in jail right now. In fact, I believe he's had to reduce his bed space in order to accommodate what's going on, I believe, with House Bill 48, because he is. There are people who are telling him who he can lodge and who he can't lodge, and that goes back to state law. And on top of that, if you look at Medford just reduced their jail space, I believe for the same reasons, by about 20%. So where does that leave us? Rick, did you want to weigh in on this?
Well, it really concerns me when Medford's cutting down, because then if people...
That's just more people out there looking for a place to go.
Yeah, and those people can be coming over here, and we already have a situation that's hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen. Well... thank you for your service on this, and we're looking to you for – you can save us all, right? Yeah. Don't you all have magic wands?
Yeah.
All right, Rick, you mentioned earlier about the water treatment plant and what's happening with the water bill. How much money can you save me, Rick?
Well, the council had the foresight to put rates in effect that already addressed the situation with creating enough income coming in to cover the bonds and everything else, and to cover the new treatment plant. So pretty much the rates you're looking at today are going to be the ones for the future also.
All right. So any word on the water treatment plant now and the progress?
I think Rob is 27, late 27. It might be start to be operating, or 28.
That's a great question. Next year or two.
We get great questions here. We don't often get the answers.
I think it was 27, which surprised me. They could be up, but it is making good progress out there. We took a tour not too long ago, and things are moving along fast.
Well, I know that they've moved out to on the parkway there, on the shoulder of the parkway, to get some things done. A couple of trees had to come out. I'm not sure how many right now, but the progress is moving along, and no hitches.
Yeah. All right. I haven't heard of any delays. No.
No, the funding, I guess, we have the way we've got it budgeted now, and it seems to be on track, and we are still hoping to get a do-over on our brick grant, and apparently that's a possibility, which
still,
would be...
We haven't heard yet, though.
Well, we haven't heard, but if we did get a chunk of money, it's quite possible that that changes things for the better for the average ratepayer, so... we may be able to kind of reformulate some of our charges and fees, but that, you know, we can all just hope for that.
All right. Do we have any idea on a time frame for that? When hope goes away, or by the end of the year? What are we talking? Years down the road?
I think we've been warned specifically to not have any hope for a particular time frame. So we're just looking at it as a lottery win if the federal government decides to really give us a fair shake and do what they should have done 2 years ago.
All right, because it was really approved until just one hitch, and we'd already started building. At any rate, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Once again, 541-472-1270 is the number to call. And in the meantime, somebody blocked off my my timepiece here to find out exactly where we're at with this particular program this morning. All right, counselors, what else on your, let's see, House Bill 48.
We do have something exciting coming up.
All right.
The project at Midland and Washington.
Ah, okay, yes.
And, you know, that's been something that has been on my radar for 6 years, since before I was even elected this time around. And we've had the last council bought that property with URA money, Urban Renewal Agency money, with the thought that, you know, it's well known that we need more housing in Grants Pass, that we're behind any of the earmarks that the state has set for us for long-term housing goals, and that could be a significant chunk of houses could move in there. So we hired, you know, this council hired a consultant to poll the people of Grants Pass, see what's needed, look at different demographic studies, you know, how much office space do we have in Grants Pass, how much is empty, you know, what vacancy rates are, things of that nature. Do we need more office space? Do we need more commercial space? And how much housing do we need? And they so far have come up with, in general, nothing is at all binding yet, three general plans after speaking with they've had open houses for neighbors to be able to weigh in, and there's still a survey out up until, I think, the 17th.
People so can that's weigh still in. Up on the website?
It should be up on the website. People can weigh in until the 17th. So that's pretty exciting. I guess really what it comes down to is we have a piece of property, and the council will have, and the city will have, hopefully multiple ways to potentially incentivize, and to find a developer and with certain incentives basically encourage them to maybe build what it is our vision is as a city, what we need up there the most.
Now they're talking about three different proposals for that area, a combination of commercial and housing, or just housing, or just commercial. Is that fair? Is that accurate?
Yeah, the first, well, and these are all just, we'll say, they're penciled in so far, that at best. But one of the options was going to create 110 housing units. Another option was going to produce 185, and I think the third option was going to be 230 housing units. For me personally, where my interest in this is, we do have, you know, quite a few low-income housing projects, you know, around the city right now, and you know, that's typically defined as 60% or less of the area median wage. And those have state and federal pipelines to be able to get those built. But as far as we'll call it workforce housing, maybe housing that would be focused for people are between 80 and 150% of the area median wage, that's hard to build because the building costs for market rate or workforce housing create situations where if a developer is going to get their rents back, they've got to basically charge more rent than people around here can afford. So we're going to have to, we're going to have to incentivize and make it more attractive for a developer. And, you know, there's ways to do that, whether it's a tax abatement for a number of years because we get no tax dollars on that piece of property anyway because we own it and it was nonprofit before that. So if we gave a tax abatement for a number of years, we wouldn't be losing any money because we, you know, we wouldn't be reducing our tax base. But that could help incentivize, or maybe land. Maybe we would give some of the land to a developer, or maybe we provide SDC grants, you know, for the system development charges for pipes in the ground and things like that. But I right now, from what I know, and I don't, you know, we still have a lot to discuss. Workforce housing for that group, that the households that make between, $45,000 and $90,000, that can't generally afford to buy a house. But they live here, and they got to live somewhere. That, to me, is where I think we would get our best bang for the buck if we can find a way to incentivize that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show, and we'll continue in a moment or two. This is KAJO, Grants Bass.
Identity theft could cost more.
Welcome back to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Second half hour here. We'll open the phone lines here. The number to call is 541-472-1270. 1270. So once you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in the queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you hear your question or comment to our guest. Our guest today, City Councilors Rob Pell and Rick Riker, both in studio today. We've been talking about lots of things. There were some positive things we did want to bring back about Parker's Place. Rob, you wanted to?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And, to me, I've thought for quite some time that once Parker's is up and running, and they're getting there, they're not fully running yet, but they will be soon. I think it's going to provide a real outlet for people in the community who want to help, want to be part of a solution. And so far, I can say that to me, it was fantastic news to hear that the, LDS Church locally, the Mormon Church locally, has ponied up and offered, it's either to Mint or Parker's or Elk Island, I'm not sure which, but almost $300,000 for a commercial heavy-duty laundry situation along with the shower building, bathroom building. And I know that Bernie has already in the ground got the infrastructure ready and the site is ready for that. But that just to me is just, that just knocks me knocks me back. It's just amazing that the generosity there, a $300,000 grant to help our homeless situation. And, I can also say that there's other churches, I believe, who are donating food on Mint would know more about it. But I know that maybe one day a week, there's somebody that's, providing 150 meals, 150 dinners, something along those lines. And, so other people. And I also know that many of the residents there are providing some of their EBT money, their food stamp money towards, supporting everybody there. So there's a lot that is going on there, and I just wanted to also, if anybody wants to step up and offer food, provide meals one day a month or one day a week or be on a regular schedule, there was just two phone numbers that I wanted to provide. One would be the phone number for Mint. That's 541-244-0156. And the other one would be to text Bernie, which would be 541-232-3520. And I know that especially for meals, they're still looking for people that want to be put on a schedule that want to be, again, part of the solution. So there's a lot real positive going on there already. And I know that in the next 3 to 6 months, when they got it dialed in a little better, I think more people are really going to want to focus on how they can help Parker's Place do a great job.
Does Parker's Place have the potential to be the place in the state to really copy for this situation? Is it going to be that good?
Certainly the potential is there, and now it's in the execution. I mean, Bernie's planning of that, the fact that he's got footings underneath those connexes that can withstand the weight of another connex on top if needed. But I would hope that our homeless population doesn't grow in Grants Pass. But the potential's there, and I know people all over the state are pointing to Grants Pass, and I would hope that somebody would take that model once we can really get it up and running and get it fine-tuned. And again, of course, operational funding is always an issue, and there's those types of funds, whether it's state or federal, they sometimes come and go year by year. So operational funding is probably going to be the biggest challenge long-term if we're going to duplicate this model around the state.
All right. We've got lots to be proud of around this city right now. Next question. What's the progress on the Al Plaza? Are we close to completion there? Do you know anything about that?
That's a good question, because I was speaking with the contractor last week, and I spoke to him the week before that and the week before that. They're hoping that within about 5 or 10 days that it's going to be nearly complete. I'm not sure if the trees will be installed. I'm hoping the trees will be installed then, and that's kind of what they've indicated. One kind of unfortunate situation is there's going to be some really big light poles that are historic themed light poles. My understanding is they were on, I'm not sure exactly how accurate I had this, but there was a 5-truck convoy that was hijacked, I believe, when it was coming across the border from Mexico, is the story, and those light poles were on there. So now we're another 45 to 60 days out.
Our light poles were hijacked?
That's what I was told. that will be, you know, kind of the icing on the cake when we get to that point. The main thing is, can you use it? Is it paved? Can we use it for parking again? Can we use it for events? And we don't need the light poles necessarily to get to that point. I've been told that it should be within the next week or two.
All right, people looking forward to that. So, Rick, Al Plaza, any comments?
No, I've taken a tour and watched the progress, and I thought it's going quite well.
Okay, all right. Do we need to form a posse to get our light poles back? I'm sorry. There are other things to talk about. We've got some parks in progress, too, do we not?
Yes, we've been doing a survey on Beacon Hill Park to see what the reaction of the adjacent neighbors would be to converting it into park and different uses in that location.
What kind of feedback are we getting?
I haven't heard what the results are. Have you, Ryan?
We don't have any results yet. We've had some people that are very much for it. We've had at least one person that comes to council meetings a few times who's adamantly against it, and she lives in that neighborhood. Her main concern is that it would end up being an attractive spot for homeless people. But, you know, the options that are being offered, I mean, are really attractive, you know, as far as even walking paths, dog parks, large and small dog parks with a basketball court. And, of course, the big one that people have been talking about is a pump track, which is really entertaining and could even be a statewide tourism draw. You know, it's a fully paved loop with banked curves and rises and falls and things like that. And it's a very, very popular activity for kids anywhere from, you know, 6 to 26. So, you know, the pump track was part of what is being considered there, but that's all in the survey. And people can take that survey on the city website.
All right. Is funding for that all set?
Funding is not all set. From what I understand, we may have half of the initial costs already in hand. The Josh Hopkins, the parks director, felt confident when he came to city council that grants would be available for the second half of the initial phase. I'm not sure about that, you know, and we didn't hear from any higher ranking officials as to validity of that statement, but he was pretty confident that grants could be gotten to at least get that park off the ground for initial parking area, initial walking paths and things of that nature.
All right, we do have a caller standing by right now. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Yes, hello. This is Tom Bradbeer calling.
Yes, Tom.
Councilors Riker and Pell, thank you very much for your steadfast service. I'd like to ask you about the role of local government in the community and particularly the role of the city council as a nonpartisan, volunteer-based council of elected officials. It appears that a number of statewide issues are entering the agenda, and one might argue that's to the detriment of dealing with the local issues. I'd like you to discuss what you see as the role of the council, particularly in relation to statewide partisan issues versus the responsibility to serve the local community.
That's a great question, and I'm sure that if we had the time, we could potentially write a doctoral thesis or hire someone to do it. Because, I'm joking, but I'm also not joking. That's a really in-depth discussion, Tom. As you know, you know, I think that it's good for the public to understand that there are statewide laws. Very much, sometimes there are unfunded mandates come down that we have to deal with. And I think it's good for the public to understand some of the constraints and the pressures that the council deals with regularly. On the other hand, I also don't feel that we should be wasting too much time focusing on those issues to the detriment of what we can actually accomplish locally. And I think that sometimes people like to almost point the finger in a different direction so that they, people don't focus on the work that's maybe not getting done or not being focused on. So, but it's a philosophical question, you know, Rick and Chuck and I and you and again, someone who's written a doctoral thesis on that could probably debate it for a long time.
Rick, you're shaking your head.
That's not my forte.
Okay. All right. Tom, you want to follow up?
No, I appreciate the response, Rob, and I really just wanted to raise the issue so that as volunteers, your time is not taken with things that are not directly related to the operation of the city. So thank you again for your service.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Tom. We appreciate that. And he called you guys volunteers. You mean you don't get the big bucks?
Thank you, Tom.
Looking for a raise, aren't you? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'll advocate for you getting twice as much money as you're getting now.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. City Councilors in studio today, and we'll have more right after this important message.
Hi, this is Lisa from...
Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. City Councilors Rick Ranker and Rob Bell are in studio today. Still have time for a couple of questions if you want to give us a call at 541-472-1270. In the meantime, though, we talked a little bit about Beacon Hill Park. We've got some other situations around town. We've talked about low-cost housing, and that appears to be not under control, but steps have been taken, and new housing is opening up very, very soon. Let's see. We have another opportunity with the riding trails up on the hill northwest of town. Where do we stand with that that park?
Are you talking about Dollar Mountain?
Dollar Mountain, yes.
Dollar Mountain is very much it's very much operational. It's in use, and I think more and more, especially I think starting probably next year, we're going to see it be. Somewhat of a statewide tourism draw as maybe different events happen.
I keep hearing that. Are we reaching out to let everybody know about it?
It's a great point. We'd have to talk to tourism and about that, but I think that now that it's fully operational, I think now we can actually start doing that.
I was under the impression that there was still more to do. You had to work with the county to get some more things done up there. Am I incorrect there?
There is some more that could be done, but it's fully operational. I mean, one challenge is that motorized vehicles sometimes can destroy the trails up there, and frankly, public safety has to figure out a way to control that. We've given them the tools on paper to do it, but it's popular. It's going to get much more popular. That's my opinion. Now that it's fully up and fully operational, or operational enough, we'll say that.
All right, gentlemen, we're down to probably our last 10 minutes here on KAJO Radio this morning. Are there areas that we haven't touched that we need to touch on for our populace out there?
I think that we've touched on the municipal court discussion is probably the next big one that we're going to have. And that, I believe, is coming up August 17th. That's a big one because the funding on that is very much up in the air. We have whether or not to start small, that just handle violations, and we'll say put our big toe in the water. That to me might make sense if our long term plan was to eventually have it be able to also. Handle misdemeanors.
Get into that second tier.
Yeah, without it, I don't know if I would support municipal court at the lower level because our city attorney seems to feel that it's really not going to do much for our catch and release system. So that's going to be a really big discussion. And where the funding is going to come from that, I'm really hoping that staff can be creative on that. I really don't know what the answer is going to be as far as the dollar amounts involved. We'll know in a few weeks.
That's one to watch for coming up in mid-August.
And that's going to determine to a big degree whether or not how effective the exclusion zone is and how effective our police can be anywhere else in town. So that's really big. And we're without it now completely. And I don't know of any other cities that have them for just the violation level offenses. And we could also add things like traffic cameras or things of that nature, which, but again, that brings up a whole nother privacy discussion. But there's a lot of things to discuss regarding a municipal court. That's going to be a, I don't think that's going to be a discussion that's going to be over very quickly. I think we're going to have an in-depth discussion on that over a period of time.
All right. Rick, I see you taking notes over there.
Well, I'm just concerned we're very blessed right now. We're not having any wildfires, and of course we just go through the whole season keeping our
fingers crossed.
That's
all of us knocking on wood here.
So, but the thing is, it's been really nice. The state gave our fire department a wildland fire truck to fight the fires. Mm-hmm. I believe that's a four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And they can go out and get into places that the regular fire trucks can't. So that's been a real bonus.
And it's already been in action, too, hasn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
They also have extra personnel on board now, thanks to the city council.
Right. They most of the time now, they have three people riding in each truck, which is about where it's supposed to be. Certainly appreciate this council's action on that and the leadership that they're getting out of the fire department right now. Mm-hmm. All right. Gentlemen, last 8 minutes here. What do you think?
Well, you know, getting back to, it's something that I wanted to acknowledge quite a while ago. But, you know, getting back to our funding of the extra 12 public safety positions, I just have to give a shout out to our former finance director, Jay Meredith, because, frankly, how council was able to manipulate the budget or ask our staff to manipulate the budget to be able to afford those 12 positions was basically Jay Meredith's plan. And he, again, was our former finance director, and he's been very involved with public safety on the county level. And he's a public safety supporter. And how that was funded was really his brainchild. And I don't think that the public really understands that actually that's where the plan developed. And so far, we're doing okay with it, and we evaluate it in future years. But at least it got us started. And I know that a number of Bracken Sharp and some other of the firemen actually reached out to me to thank the council for the funding that allowed them to go three per truck. They were very grateful for that. And I really appreciated him reaching out because he had been a very vocal critic of the old funding method and the old manpower method. And to know that it was important to him was gratifying. So, but that's, and right now we're still waiting. We don't have any new police officers online yet. I know that
they're more difficult to put online.
Much more difficult, take way longer. And I understand that they were actually getting down to some of the final interviews after people had passed background checks and so forth. And I haven't heard how that went. So I'm really hoping that that went well and that they have six or more really good candidates.
All right. Once we get six more candidates, what do we expect from the police department?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and I know that the day that we...
I.e. traffic enforcement.
Okay, very good point. Very good point, because one of the, you know, when talking about the Washington Midland project, one of the things that the neighborhood, the neighbors had to say at the first public meeting, they were concerned with traffic enforcement. They felt that people were speeding a lot in that neighborhood and so forth. And, you know, when I heard that comment, I am quite sure, because I go through that neighborhood very often, people don't speed any more in that neighborhood than they do in any other neighborhood in town. I see it, you know, up on Highland. I see it going up, even up the hills, up Morgan, up region. People be going 40 miles an hour up the hills. So, and I'm quite sure if you go to Grandview or any other place in town, you've got a similar situation. So traffic, traffic enforcement will be very much appreciated. Downtown especially, people will blow through lights. You know, we've had over the years a few pedestrians hit. So that would be one thing. And the police chief has said that two of those positions would be taken by traffic enforcement. And I think that everybody will be really happy about that.
Right. I have no doubt about that. Regularly, I see traffic signs totally ignored.
Right.
Totally ignored. And I happen to have some experience up on Hawthorne Avenue where people turn off from Midland and it's how fast can I get to Club Northwest?
Yeah.
Once again, Rob, we see that all over town.
Right.
And just go up 7th Street at 4 o'clock and you'll find out why. All right, gentlemen, you're talking. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Rick, what should people take away from today's show?
I think it's been very informative about Midland, what's going on there, and also the parks, and just how the homeless situation is moving forward.
All right. What would you say to your constituents right now? What would you like to hear from them?
Well, as I said before, it's really interesting to give out my email, give out my phone number. I get very few calls. I think now I know Rob's phone rings off the hook. But I don't know. Just, you know, I'm available to hear from people if they want to contact me. That's fine.
All right. And then that's easy enough to find. Check the city's website. You may be one of the softest spoken counselors out there right now, but when you speak, people listen, because you always have something valid to say, Rick. And that's
thank you, Chuck.
And I'm not just blowing smoke here, folks. Anybody who has watched the city council will know that that's the situation. That brings up one quick situation. Just the last city council meeting that I found very interesting was the sign ordinance. And we're putting up a new sign for IHOP and the Les Schwab facility going on over on Agnes. And that was delayed while we do a flag test? Can you explain that and why it's important before we approve that?
We as the council, and I was pretty much behind it, that we needed more information before we approved it. And as Rob has even said, if we're going to approve it for one way, we should be changing the ordinance so we can approve it for others. But the thing I want to see on the flag test, and they're going to choose three different heights for observation purposes, is to see when we choose a height, is that height effective? If it's not effective, and it really, for instance, if they're looking for 80 feet versus 60 feet, if the 80 foot and 60 foot doesn't have a visual difference, then I think the council would probably go with the 60 foot to be more conforming with the existing signs.
Yeah,
and
that
procedure is going to be done this Wednesday.
I just wanted to point out to people that what we're talking about here is they want to get that tall sign out there to pull the traffic off of I-5 for Dutch Bros and for the Les Schwab situation going on over in Agnes Avenue. We've already got a couple of signs over there. IHOP has a tall sign up there. The Best Western has a big sign up there. Are we going to have a lot of tall signs out there once this is done?
That's part of my concern, because I mentioned in the meeting, you know, does Elmer's want a tall sign? Does AT&T want a tall sign? Does Walmart want a tall sign?
Want Fred Meyer want a tall sign for their fuel depot? Yeah, we could have a forest of tall signs out there.
So I think, as Robin said, we probably should look at the ordinance again and see what we're willing to tolerate. But one of my recommendations would be, if we're going to look for tall signs, at least put two signs on each pole. So that would reduce the number of pole signs.
All right, there you go. And that flag test, the flag test. Can you explain what a flag test is? And it just determines the visual opportunities. Is that it?
Yes, they're going to use, I think, a crane that can lift a rope or whatever, 100 feet in the air, and coming down, they'll have. I'm not sure what the heights are going to have. I think they're going to have 80, 60, and probably 50 or 40. Just to see what the difference is. But my concern is, I'm not sure if you're north down on I-5, even if you have a pole 80 feet high, that it's going to be visible from the traffic heading northbound.
Well, one to watch for. Watch for that one. And we're hearing about that one next Wednesday.
Well, it's the test is going this Wednesday.
The test is going tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
Okay. And all right. So if you see something going on out there, folks, that's it. All right. We're down to our last few minutes here, Rob. What do we need to take away from today's program?
Well, I think, you know, this is nothing new, but we've got, you know, people that can be real positive, half full kind of glass, half full kind of people. We've got naysayers. But for people that choose to live their life on a glass, half full kind of perspective, I mean, we've got potentially, we've moved past the worst times in our homeless situation. Hopefully we may have an actual, really good, an integral piece. It's never going to be a final solution, but Parkers and Mint together will be an integral piece of our handling of homeless, with case management and trying to get people back into being productive members of society that are working and taxpaying and possibly paying rent somewhere. We've got potentially the potential for an additional park in the northeast section. I know that's been looked at for over 20 years, since 2002. We've got hopefully more police coming online in the next year, which again will hopefully help our entire city with regards to some of the catch and release issues, and if we can get a municipal court online in the next year or so. So there's a lot of reasons to be positive, and of course any one of those things naysayers can shoot holes in, and that's what they may choose to do, but and I'm willing to listen to that if they have an alternative or if they have a solution or if they have some other way of handling some of those situations. But right now the council's trying to look at positive ways to move forward, and as always, some of these things may end up costing more money too, so that could be end up back in the lap of the taxpayers. But there's a lot of reasons to that we're ahead of where we've been in prior years.
All right, final thoughts, Rick?
None.
All right, gentlemen, we want to thank you very much, and to all of you out there, we want to thank you for your ears once again. City Council is very transparent. All of the meetings are televised over their website. So check that out. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We thank you for your ears today.
I move.